I know. Let me start recording. I'll do like a little intro for you because I want to see if you remember the last time we saw each other.
Nervous.
Today, I'm talking to my buddy who I haven't gotten to catch up with in a long time, co-founder of Prosper at Work, CEO and founder of Glam and Go, Erica Waugh. How you doing?
Hi.
So last time Eric and I saw each other, I think it was maybe 4 years ago, we met up for vodka sodas and we drank a lot. Do you remember?
No.
We got like drunk.
In the city or
We
Boston?
were in Manhattan. I think it was like 4 years ago because I haven't drank now for like about a year. Maybe you didn't get as drunk with me, but I went to a bar and we got some drinks.
We went to Jake's Saloon.
Yes.
Yes, that is the last time I was there. And we ended up meeting those weirdos because we're
Yeah.
seeing, yes, those weird guys.
Wait, but did you drink a lot that night or was it just me? Because I
No,
think,
it wasn't us.
okay, because I think we hadn't seen each other in a long time, so we were catching up and something, 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 vodka soda, and then I just remember really hazy being, and we went somewhere and got appetizers.
We definitely didn't eat at Jake's Saloon.
We went
No.
somewhere else, we went somewhere nice and,
Yes,
yeah.
you're right. And we had that delicious mac and cheese. Oh, we're like ready to start over again because we just had pasta and carbs and cheese. And so let's keep the vodka coming.
That's so funny you remember that because it's like no matter how drunk you get, the macaroni and
I do.
cheese. The second you said that, I remember that too. It came in like a little like skin.
And we like, really, do we get the truffle? Do we not get the truffle? And I'm pretty sure we
Wow.
went truffle.
What? I just remember being, yeah, I just remember getting really drunk. I do kind of remember meeting some weird guys.
Yeah, because Jake's had that like, open area. They may have been homeless. They may have not been. We don't know. They were
Oh,
on the street and we were sitting.
who's to say? We can't be trusted in a bar with a bunch of vodka sodas and a homeless entourage.
I would say for the lifetime of our friendship, you and I have never been able to be trusted in a bar.
Well, I have stopped. I don't drink anymore
I
now.
know this is news to me.
Yeah, I stopped drinking, but you know what it really was? It's because of comedy. I was just drinking too much and it was making me feel disgusting. But I wanted to kind of backtrack, paint the context for you and everything that you've done. I wanted to ask first what you were like as a kid and also where you grew up to set the scene for people.
So I bounced around a bit as a kid. I grew up in Long Island for a while and then moved into the city. I
When
was
you bounced around, was that because
in
of work for your parents or what was going on?
No, I mean, nothing crazy. I just was in Long Island and then I was in the city and then I went to boarding school,
At what age?
junior and senior year,
So high school.
high school.
What made you end up going to boarding school?
You know, first off, it's one of the best schools in the country.
Oh yeah, well, I wasn't thinking it was. Which one was it?
Emma Willard.
Wait, in you probably
From
mapping.
good old Troy, well,
There.
of the world, plus
Really?
plus a really good boarding school. I
Why
would
did you
not
only go
as
there for the 2 years?
well. I went to high school and then I don't know, it made sense. It seemed super fun. It was super fun. I was politely asked to leave.
Why?
Oh, so stupid. It was a Model UN trip to Montreal. We were seniors and we went out drinking. That was it. I wish it was a better story.
You're a kid, you're drinking. It is
Yeah,
what it
that's
is.
what it is. And then I went to the wilderness for 3 months and I hiked and lived in a sleeping bag in a tent in the
Where
southwest United States. And then I got my GED and went to BU.
Now, when you were a kid, like elementary school, were you outgoing, introvert? What were you like personality-wise?
I don't know. I had my friends. I wasn't super popular, but I wasn't not popular. I just was very much into my little world of people. And I used to get in trouble a lot because I hated gym class. I thought it was the
So
worst.
did I. I hated it. I hated it because I was kind of chubby. I was
Me
chubby.
too.
You were?
Yeah, it was
Yeah.
uncomfortable. It's embarrassing. I wasn't very good at it. And so they'd put me in the outfield and I just start picking flowers and just doing whatever it was.
I fucking hate it. And they would make you have to take the test. You have to run a mile.
Oh my God, that took me
Me
forever. Like, I
too.
remember the sun came down and I was like, can I stop? This is mortifying.
What day of the week is? I remember I was doing some kind of gym thing and I remember saying to the girl next to me, I was like, I'll stop if you stop and then we can stop together. And she was like, no, I want to run. And I was like, damn. And then she kept going and I was like, fucking shit.
Nobody wants to run. Okay. The only people that want to run should be being chased. I don't understand marathons, half marathons, considering there's no like Godzilla balloon behind them.
Not
Why?
into it. Not into it. And then when you were in high school, were you more focused on academics or social, or what were you like?
Definitely social.
Must have done well in academics enough to get into Emma Willard School. And BU is a very hard school to get into.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm like a baseline intelligent human. I didn't, you know.
I get that. I mean, did you test well?
I tested average, but I was a very standard B plus student without having to do anything.
That surprises me. I would think that you would be very You must have been in, because you must have had signs of being an ambitious person as a kid too.
You know, I don't even know.
Or so, maybe I'm just picturing that, knowing you now, you're very ambitious. So I guess I'm picturing you as like a little businesswoman as a kid.
I'm very resourceful and I'm very restless. I wouldn't even say now that I'm ambitious.
That's interesting. I think about restlessness a lot because I have my ADHD. I'm like restless. I'm also can be kind of irritable too. And that is an interesting line between what's restless and ambitious. But I would say that it's channeling the restlessness into a productive thing also then can help if you are ambitious too.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, honestly, it's more of a restlessness and more of a need to have freedom that has resulted in my being entrepreneurial. I never did well in structure. That just wasn't for me. And when someone would be like, oh, you have to do something this way, my natural inclination was always, why? Are you sure about that?
Would you get in trouble for that?
All the time.
Yeah.
It was like, what about this way? Like if, you know, especially early in my working days, like 16 plus, I got fired from every single job I've ever had.
Me too?
Every single one.
And what was your first job? Wait, no, it's not starting at 16. I didn't get fired at 16. I mean, after college, I got fired. But 16, what did you get fired for then?
I missed the last day of work because I went in the city with my friends and I couldn't get to work. And it was in Metro Park, New Jersey. I wasn't fired. That's actually my first internship and I was not fired.
Okay.
I show up on the last day and they didn't give me a gift card.
Fired!
But like, I remember the night prior and I don't know, we met some random people and we stayed out until like 4 or 5 in the morning. And I was just like, I cannot get this on the Metro North right now. My last day, which was shitty, but that is what happened.
And then you did get fired from other jobs?
Yeah. I got fired in college from 2 restaurants and 1 gym.
What did you deserve to get fired?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So did I. I was doing quote unquote business development and I never sold anything. So
that, yeah, you should leave.
Tia's,
which is that restaurant on the waterfront in Boston. We had disagreements over the uniform.
Were you wearing something? Just what was going on?
So we took the job because it was where all like these like hot like young professionals hung out after work, and then they put me in these like white orthopedic sneakers and these white shorts and a sweatshirt, and I was like, this is not why I'm here.
Right, I'm here to meet somebody.
This isn't gonna work for me.
Oh boy. What would you do if one of your employees was talking to you the way you were talking to your former bosses?
You know, it's funny. I saw Kathy because I go to Boston not that often, not infrequently.
Right. Your former boss.
Of course I remember you.
Right.
We have a picture together. And one of the guys that I picked up during that 3-week stint is still one of my really good friends.
Oh, that's great. So you didn't have a steady boyfriend in college?
I had a guy from sophomore year until 2 years after college.
That's a long time.
Who we were like always on and off. We were never exclusive. We were like very much, I don't know. It was a weird, weird relationship.
You just kept going back to each other?
Yeah, we were in the same group of friends. We actually really loved each other. I talked to him not that long ago. He's moving to Australia. So randomly enough, we're hiring for the new company now. And one of the people who applied was one of his direct reports. Hi, I know we haven't talked in like 5 years, but you're a reference on this resume.
You're like, I'm about to get the 411, so I hope you don't regret putting him as a reference.
Yeah, I mean, who would have known that,
right?
You know, who you used to sleep with in college.
Right. Were you still entrepreneurship when you were in college, or what did you think you wanted to do?
I studied broadcast journalism.
Which BU is known for.
Well, considering that they're known for it, they should be able to put it on a diploma, because apparently broadcast journalism is too long.
Really?
So I have a bachelor's of arts in BJ. That's what it says.
No way.
It's in my grandma's garage. That's what it says.
It's in the garage, buried under a bunch of stuff. B.J. Uh-huh. Has anyone pointed that out to them?
My father.
I mean, yeah.
More than $1 million later, I could have gotten
there. Right, right, right. Yeah, like I didn't need to go to BU for this. They must know that's what it stands for, blowjob.
I'm sure maybe they've changed it throughout the years. We're going back over a decade at this
right.
point.
But BU is also such an expensive school to then hand you a diploma in BJ.
Yep. Well, I remember looking at it being like, not wrong.
I didn't know it was official. I didn't know I was getting credit for this.
No.
Your dad's like, all right, okay. Oh, so after Boston University, did you stay in Boston or did you move back to New York then?
I moved, I think, before graduation. I got hired. I wanted to go to LA, actually. And I went and I lasted like 6 weeks.
Oh, I remember that because you were working at the Tyra Bank, right?
Well, Tyra is what brought me back to New York.
Okay, right. I forgot about that. I remember that just now. You went to LA and why was I so short-lived?
So I graduated in May. I went in June and then Tyra called me and said, come back to New York. You have to start mid-July.
How did that connection happen?
I was interning in the Glamour Fashion Closet between sophomore year and junior year.
So this wasn't the internship that you didn't get the gift card from, or was it?
Before.
So this one
was a crazy person. I was partying a lot.
Right.
And my mom was like, yeah, we're not having a summer like we had last summer. And you're going to get like a respectable internship. And she actually somehow, my mom's amazing. And she said, I'm going to change your life. And for my birthday, it had to be Christmas because this was a summer internship. She had won at some charity auction or like charity buzz, a week internship in the fashion closet. And she's like, you do with it what you will. A week.
Oh, that's funny. They must have given it as a week too, because they're like, okay, we're going to auction this off. And then if we get stuck with some shitty person, it's just a week.
Exactly.
Right.
You do with this what you will. You want this to change your life, it can. And I was like, okay. So I went. A week ended up becoming the full summer.
Great.
And then Tyra came in to film something in the closet, and I thought TV production looked really cool, and I was really interested in what they were doing. So like, I made sure that like anytime they needed something, I was there. Anytime like they looked around, like there I was. And then I got this woman, Kristen Wendell's information. I said, I'd really like, I'm interning here this summer, but I would really like to come and interview and intern with you guys next summer. And they had me as an intern for my junior to sophomore year, or junior to senior year.
Were you working directly with Tyra at that point? Like, was she in the office a lot?
What do you mean? Like the...
When you were interning for her company?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Honestly, I learned a lot about how to run a company from interning and working at Tyra. I learned a lot of what not to do too, but like, you know, she, I think, is someone who just deserves all of the credit and the kudos and the plus 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 that she's built. She's very strong opinion. She's very involved. She holds people accountable. She created an environment that like was tough, but I think was really rewarding for people who were passionate about what she was building. I wasn't super passionate about what she was building. And so it wasn't. And I also just like TV production wasn't the thing that I thought it was. So I did short stint, and then I'd already started doing stand-up senior year of college. And so I was working at Gotham on 23rd at night, and then Tyra was on 26th.
So sweet. Perfect. That's a nice little commute. And this was kind of the height of when she was really, what shows was she doing then?
So it was America's Next Top Model,
yeah,
with the short girls. And by short, they're still like 6 inches taller than me.
Sure. Right. Right. Those little people.
Those little people that tower over you, them.
Right.
But they were like 5'7", so they're like an inch taller than me, but whatever.
Right.
And the talk show. But the talk show was weird. Like, you don't realize how much of it's produced and pre-produced, and like,
right,
you know TV better than anybody. Like, you can't sit there and spend 10 hours for random girl from Pennsylvania to finally get to the point of the story that moves the story along.
Well, so that's the thing with it, something with unscripted shows, that's where it gets really tough, because you do have to let the person genuinely come. You can't tell them what to say, and you can't them.
Told them what to say. So we would pre-interview them, write down all their answers, then take their answers, put them into a form of a story that made sense for the arc of the segment.
Right.
And when they came, it was my job to basically like take them into a room and like become their friend, and then be like, remember when that happened to you? Exactly like this, when you were wearing that sweater that really set Carolina off and reminded her that she hated Confederacy.
Right. Do you remember that? Do you remember that really well? Can you tap into it right now? Right.
And then I would sit there with like their answers, and I would ask them the questions way Tyra is going to answer them. And if they started going off on tangents, I would just start like waving my hand and be like,
really? And would they get it?
That's not how it happened. This is how it happened.
So I worked on a reality show for a tiny little bit. like in December and January. And the way that it was different because it wasn't trying to, we did, it wasn't a talk show where we needed to get people like on a level 10 by the time they went out with their story prepped. But the way he would lead it is, and it would usually be, it was very smooth. He would say, so you and Emma met through town. Would you say that was an exciting meeting when you guys met? And they'd be like, no, I mean, you know, we kind of knew it was, and he, but it, because it was exciting to see someone that you knew. It was like, would you say it was exciting? And there, this one woman I remember was just not getting it. She was like, well, we'd known each other, so it really wasn't. He'd go, but it's exciting.
How excited were you?
And I remember I was sitting there like, I was like, lady, just fucking, just, you know the word he's going for, but he couldn't just be like, you were excited. And then he'd be like, let me rephrase that. The emotions that you feel sometimes are a whole range. Sometimes they can be exciting, right? And she'd be like, yeah, sometimes I get excited. And he'd be like, okay, great, cut, we got it. And then, you know, like things like that. And then it's all, it really is all in the editing. This, yeah. that show I witnessed, I was surprised at how little of that he really did do. But it's different for a talk show because you're also doing it with multiple people to get something.
We were also filming 6 episodes a week. You have a live audience of people that have been corralled from wherever the fuck they've been corralled from, who just sat in a basement to get entertained by me and Cheez-Its.
You were doing the, like, you were doing like the welcoming to the audience?
So not like the warm-up comic, like that's once they get into the room.
Right.
But they're in a holding cell for a really long time.
Yes, I went to the VO once.
They better be entertained.
Totally. Totally.
I'm like throwing M&Ms, like, how many do you think I can catch in my mouth?
Right, running around. You're like the fluffer.
Yeah, basically.
Yep.
I was Tyra's fluffer.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. So you did that, and then you're like, no more TV production, but I want to do entertainment.
Yeah, and so then was still doing stand-up at night. Luckily, when Google bought YouTube, their vice president of programming at Digital Broadcasting Group had seen me. Found me on Facebook. After the show.
It's a really interesting thing about stand-up too. I mean, it really is like, and it's not just with stand-up, it's kind of anything where you put yourself out there. You really, there's truly no way to know what's gonna go in which direction from what. But the only thing you can control is putting yourself out there and then putting yourself in the proximity that someone potentially could see it.
Totally. I feel like that's life. That's
absolutely. 100%.
And
stand-up's just a very intense medium to put yourself out there in, like very intense.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's because it's just so like, it's like going from 0 to 1,000 in a relationship right away by being like, we're going to share this humor.
Yeah, and like, and if we don't share this humor, like this is going to be a really uncomfortable 15 minutes for all of us.
Amen. Totally. And then because sometimes if someone thinks they don't share your humor, they're like, I hate you. Which is always interesting to me. I'm like, if at the baseline, it's someone trying to entertain someone else. So it's weird for you to, instead of being like, I'm not entertained, like that would be more logical than to be like, I hate that comic. They're not funny.
I think the whole thing about humor is it's so much a appendage of your opinions and your education and your background and like how you quantify what is going on in the world around you and like how you cope.
Totally.
But like when you come up against people who cope differently, like they also are, as an audience member, are entitled to incredibly strong opinions about the things that you choose to talk about on stage. So like, you know, I think it's a tough relationship, but it's certainly a relationship.
Absolutely. 100%. So he saw you at one of those, hit you up on Facebook. And then that was when you're doing the show on YouTube.
Yeah. So Google bought YouTube, wanted to flood it with content. I helped them build out what their home and design vertical was going to be.
Would you say that that's when you started being like officially, cause that was, it's entrepreneurial to do stand up and those things, but would that say when you started like really like integrating doing?
Not really. I had a salary. You know, hosted for them for a long time. And then
were you happy when you're doing that?
Yeah, so happy. Are you kidding? With my dream. All I got to do is like sit on different couches and decide which ones I liked. It was the best.
That is fabulous.
No, I mean, I also got to see really cool things and meet really cool people. And I love interior design.
Totally.
Down to High Point, and I got to like hang with Tom Felicia, and like I had a little interview show called Wine with Wasser, and like just people I wouldn't have had access to. And
sure.
I wouldn't have had access to. And they were paying me more money than I'd ever made in my life.
Right.
They were paying me nearly six figures to like fuck around and have fun with people.
Now that's not normal. So that's really great. Because also feeling when you're doing something that you love and then you're also getting compensated for it, that's like the trifecta of work, like the exchange rate.
That's,
So you were thrilled.
Thrilled, like beyond thrilled.
Were you worried like if it's this is going to end or were you like, nope, I'm just going to keep this going?
You know, towards the end, we knew it was going to end. Mainly due to circumstances that were outside of our control. So like, I don't want to talk shit because DGB was really, really good to me, but like Google gave them a huge check and like our channel had to like pick up the slack from some projects that went a little bit sideways. So then when it came time to refund, I was like, well, where did all of these dollars go? And like all of them didn't go to our resources for this specific project.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, well, no.
Basically. It's tough to,
you were supposed to have 2 years of runway and like you're coming back soon.
It's tough when people were with digital, even now that, and people had more time to learn how to quantify the return on investment with what they're putting into digital stuff. It is still, it takes time. And especially in the beginning, the expectations were just so fucking weird. Like I'd say a couple years after you must've been doing that, I remember doing something and someone was like, they're paying these guys I knew to make viral videos. And they were trying to explain, well, we can't guarantee what's going to go viral, but we can try to put ourselves in the best position for that to happen. And I think they were funding them for maybe 5 months and then a video hadn't officially gone viral. And they were like, we're cutting it by 100%. And it's just,
yeah, I feel like people just don't, I don't think anyone really understands like digital social outside of Kris Jenner. Like
right. She knows. That motherfucker.
Somebody knows, and it is this one lady.
She knows.
I went down such a Kim Kardashian rabbit hole this morning.
Really? She's pretty. Yeah. I saw someone do a really funny joke about her, and I saw them do it one time, and I was like, he basically was talking about how people are like, everyone thinks Kim Kardashian got famous because of a sex tape, and he was like, that's not true. I've seen a million different sex tapes, and I've never been like, I wonder what her family's up to. And I always, he like went on to talk about like what all the talents she had. And I wish I remembered the full joke and remembered who said it, but I thought that, yeah, she's captivating.
She is captivating. Like she took a picture of herself in like these 90s sunglasses with like tendrils and this top.
There was a tendril?
You know how when you have like hair that's back and then like two pieces in the front?
Yes.
It was like this weird photo. And then the caption was, manifest your dreams. You can do anything. And I was like, and so of all of the things that you can do, this is what you chose?
Yeah,
like,
this is it. So this is what you were really dreaming about that whole time. If you could ask.
It was like this weird, it just had no
connection. If you could ask Kris Jenner one thing, what would you ask her?
Would you like to be my manager? Are you open to adopting a white Jew?
Would you really, well? Aren't they Jewish?
No.
They're not Jewish?
No.
What are they?
I mean, listen, I think the Jews would claim them considering the income quota, but like.
Right. Maybe in a, are they Armenian?
Yeah.
Okay. You would want to be managed by her?
Or in a fucking heartbeat.
Really?
Being the devil's advocate.
Think about what she would probably, do to your like family life though. Cause it's,
I just can't imagine what she would do to my face.
It was just starting there. Yeah. But like, I can't, that's what would stop me. Cause I'm like, oh, I can't trust her around my mom or like, cause she probably would make your life into a reality show.
I mean,
so be it.
Listen, what are like two of the kids are official billionaires now.
And then you've got Rob.
Well, and then there's always Rob. Poor Rob.
There's always Rob with his sock business.
Sock business.
Oh yeah. Oh, okay. So a couple years ago, it was like right when he was with. So I had this 3-month thing where I was writing on a show that didn't get picked up. It was called, it was called Pop Capsule. And I was just doing research on different segments. And every day they were looking for pop culture things. And like they would be like, just start with the Kardashians. What are the Kardashians doing? We need, what are Amber Rose and the Kardashians doing? We need stuff to like Kardashians.
Yeah.
So I started following them all the time. And then I uncovered Rob had like a sock business that didn't work out, but he was like stuck with like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of sock inventory.
You know what he should do? He should donate them to homeless shelters because it's one of the biggest items that socks.
Oh, really?
Yes.
He should.
Homeless shelters and just not even just homeless shelters, just shelters in general for
absolutely
shelter things. There's a better way to say that. Because thanks to donate old socks and underwear.
Right.
Right. You're like, who the fuck is going to want this? But there's all of these people that actually need it.
You can donate old socks, or do they need to be new?
You can donate old. I mean, obviously, if you're donating like socks with a big hole in them or like something disgusting,
right.
You know, have some decorum. But like, there's a huge breadth of the void of socks and underwear for people that need clothes.
Well, Rob better get on that shit.
If Rob Kardashian is listening,
yeah, he's my number one fan.
Really?
No. Oh my god. That'd be amazing. That'd be so fucking real. I mean, I don't even know. I haven't done it.
Does just like hang at home and listen to podcasts.
Could be. Like,
what is he doing? He's not.
I mean, the sock business didn't take off. I think he's been in and out of rehab. Maybe. I think his relationship with Black China didn't go too well.
Can I like cheat on my phone and
look it up, please? Of course. Absolutely. So you, when the digital stuff started to wind down, were you feeling like, were you feeling panicked or how were you feeling then?
I had already been picked up by there was like a little gap actually. I had already started talking to HGTV to move from YouTube to HGTV.com front door, which was a Scripps thing now, which is Discovery. And so I sort of knew I'd be fine. And I was bummed, but also like I had just made pretty decent money. And mm-hmm. So like I wasn't in like a cash crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in between coming down from Spaces, ramping up towards like getting back into getting on stage. I had like a couple, I wrote an article for Glamour, like doing that mm-hmm. magazine stuff and figuring out what like my next hosting gig was going to be. And I was sitting in my dad's office and he's like not a super huge supporter of a life spent in the arts. Like a degree in BJ is one thing, but a degree was still a degree.
Right.
And he said, I don't care what you do, but you cannot just sit around waiting for your next hosting gig, like, or your next thing. Like, you need to go do something.
Right.
And I was like, okay, well, you know, I'm doing all these things. He goes, again, I don't care what you do. You need to go do something. And I was like, well, I kind of want to put hairstylist in gyms.
Huh.
Have I not been clear? Don't care what you do. Go do something. And I was like, okay. And so I had my roommate, sorry, I like had a kick.
Did you feel like you needed to prove, did that make you feel like irritated or how'd that make you feel?
I mean, I think I just felt like, gosh, shit, I'm going to have to go do something. I'm going to listen to this. It's going to be Groundhog's Day until I do.
Right.
And I was living with this guy, Mike, who'd gone to Wharton.
Business school.
He went to Wharton Business. And I came home and I said to him, here's what happened. And he was starting a company. And as most people who go to Ivy League schools are to those who have not, he was like kind of dismissive. I'm like,
really?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's, I mean, there's probably quite a few reasons for that. Probably mm-hmm. the kindest one is like them being like, I studied all of this. There's no way for me to impart this little bit of knowledge quickly with you. You know what I mean? Because I'm sure if you went to business school, everyone's like, I've got an idea. But then the other end of that is that people thinking like, you can never understand. I'm better than you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he was like a little condescending. And sure. So I was like, oh, really? Mm. And so then, like, I would watch him work from our living room. And I realized that like all you need to do to start a company is put together a PowerPoint.
Okay. So I saw that in an interview you did that you said that. I actually copy pasted that as a thing that you said that. Cause that is.
I was like, you're starting a business. You're fucking around on PowerPoint.
What planted that in your head? What were the observations that led you to say, this is what I had read you said. I had no idea that all you needed to start a business was an idea and a PowerPoint, but everything grew from there. What made you realize that's all you needed?
Mike, because he was always working. Did you ever go to our Tribeca apartment?
Yes, beautiful, so beautiful.
You remember that giant gold thing in the kitchen, like that like island?
Mm-hmm. That apartment was so well done. And because I notice interior design, it's not something that I have interest in creating myself, but when I'm in a certain spaces, I just clock it as like, oh, this is gorgeous, I love this.
What happened with that apartment?
No, I don't know what happened with that apartment.
Okay, so that apartment was a total shit show when we found it. And I said to Spaces, which was my Google, so we were trying to do a renter renovation show forever. And the renter would always fall out because they were afraid at the last minute of their lease or their landlord.
Right.
So when my roommates and I found this apartment that was like 75 stairs straight up, remember?
Yeah.
Poltergeist entrance.
Yep. Yep.
I said to my producer, I said, listen, give me 10 episodes of web airtime. I'll be the renter. I'll host it. I'll write it. And I'll barter with everyone to get it designed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so I was 25 years old on the phone with like Bob's Furniture and Home Depot and the kitchen guy who came in from Arizona and designers. And like, I tricked that place out on no money. And it's a show that still exists on Spaces TV on YouTube called It's Got Potential.
Wow. Yeah, it definitely was tricked. That's what that, remember what was that exhibit show when he tricked out the cars? Yeah. Remember that? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that apartment was definitely tricked out. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you. So that's you're observing him making PowerPoints and you're like, I can make a PowerPoint.
Yeah, fuck you. I can make a PowerPoint.
But you need to know numbers. You got to know math, don't you?
Oh, I still don't know math.
I don't know math. So you didn't know math? There's no math in the PowerPoint?
At the time, no. It was just an idea. Mm. And I then found out there was a convention of gyms that was happening in Chicago called the Club Fit Industry whatever. And I decided I'm going to go and hang out at the bar at the hotel in Chicago.
What do I know how to do?
What do I know how to do? I know how to make friends at bars.
Right.
And I know that the people that I want to talk to are all going to be in one shitty Hyatt.
Amen. This is a really good
13th and 15th.
This is a really good takeaway because it really, it is showing like you just have to be a little bit creative with what you're trying to do. So you get to that bar.
So I put together, so Mike ended up not being a dick in the end and he helped me and he gave me his PowerPoint designer, which is something that you need.
But, right. So he had a, so not only what you need is to start to get, learn PowerPoint, but you can also get someone to do the PowerPoint too.
So the new company, I made the PowerPoint myself.
Good for you.
But thank you. But yeah, so I had my little PowerPoint and what I did was, is I sat there and like looked at the attendees list and then started sending all these emails to make like meeting requests to people that were going to this thing. One of the guys who responded was this.
Question. Would you, now I would classify that as ambitious.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just very like resourceful.
Okay.
And I just didn't want to get yelled at, honestly.
So did you feel like you weren't feeling like a burning desire to be like, I'm going to do this.
I just wanted someone to do my hair in the gym.
So interesting. It's so interesting to me the different reasons that propel people to do something.
I didn't feel like getting yelled at. At the same time, I got asked to do the MTV showcase at the Stand. It went really well. So like all of my moves, everything was, this was supposed to be a side hustle, the thing.
Right.
And so in any case, I put together this idiot PowerPoint. I sent it to Ann Beth, who is then the CEO of Exhale. She says, can you talk to our COO, Julia? I go in.
Now, quick question again, because also in another interview I read, you said part of what was almost helpful, I'm paraphrasing, almost helpful was that you didn't know everything. So you didn't, if you had, so you weren't worried about someone taking the idea, you weren't making them sign NDAs.
First off, it's completely, I don't make people sign NDAs to this day for anything that I touch. They're completely a waste of your energy and time. Like, have you ever taken an NDA seriously?
I'm the wrong person to ask. So NDA stands for non-disclosure agreement. I mean,
in entertainment and when you're doing writing projects, it's a little bit different because you're collaborating so much on ideas.
Yeah. So I mean, I can only represent myself. Like I have a distinct memory of, I had this audition that I wouldn't have thought anything of and they made me sign 3 NDAs. And it was like for like, not a big part. It was for a Vin Diesel movie. No, not Vin Diesel. Jean-Claude Van Damme. Excuse me. And I'm like, why do I have to sign 3 NDAs just to see the script for this audition? And because they made me sign the 3 NDAs, you know, I'm joking if I ever get in trouble for this. But so I sent it to my dad because it made me want to share it that they made me sign these NDAs. Like I was like.
So it had the adverse effect.
100, because I would have literally not thought anything. I'm like, 3 NDAs for this fucking thing? So I sent it to my dad and then he said he printed it out and then shredded it. And I was like, Jesus Christ. He was like, you can't sign, you have to take that thing, those things seriously. You could be taken to court. Like you can't, I got yelled at for that.
don't know.
So you didn't
say forgiveness, not permission. Mm. Yeah, so I didn't know anything, and they were like, okay, can you open in 30 days? And I just said yes.
Who said, can you open in 30 days?
Exhale said, yes, we like this idea. You can put hairstylists in our place. And it was good because it's where I like to work out.
Where were you getting the hairstylist from originally?
Oh, I had no idea. I figured it out over the course of, it took me 45 days, not 30. And we opened,
what the fuck?
We opened a chair in their retail space. We blew out their fuses almost every day.
Sure.
And a month later, we got written up in the New York Times. And then Good Morning America called and said, can we come film tomorrow?
How did you find your first hairstylist?
Craigslist.
Oh, really?
It was a girl named Coco, and she had a neck tattoo, and she scared those Upper East Side bitches like, you have no idea.
Hey, if you find a hairstylist on Craigslist, I think that's probably par for the course.
You find a lot of hairstylists on Craigslist, actually.
Really?
That, and they're really great, but I was just like, do you have a, I literally hired her on the phone. I was like, do you have a pulse? Do you have a license? Great.
See, have you seen hair before? Let me entrust you, because also
the nicest girl.
Also, this is a time. Also, that area, upper, that like clientele mixed with that. This is when Yelp is popping too. So if someone doesn't like something, they're gonna be reviewing it.
I managed to stay off Yelp for the first couple of years of the business.
Good for you.
I wouldn't make the pages, and I wouldn't claim the pages.
So smart. Because Yelp is a hustle where they also, it's very tricky because they call businesses and will say, pay us, and then you can own the page. You can kind of like manipulate what pops up with the Yelp. So Yelp is tricky.
Yelp is tricky. Yelp still believes that I owe them $1,200.
For what?
That's what I said.
Mm. Right.
I get notices from Yelp all the time.
Right, right. You're like, thank you for this. That's what the name. That's what their name actually stands for. They're just yelping at you that you owe them money. Just like yelping.
Yeah.
So you started it up, and I also read that in the beginning you were in charge of guarding the sign up board. So explain what the explain if someone isn't familiar with Glam and Go, what it is exactly you guys do too.
I mean, so now we're 14 stores across the country. We are, you know, one of the larger female-centric salon chains in America.
Mm.
But then we were a stool and a little IKEA kitchen cart in Exhale's retail space on Madison and 76th Street. And we were very high-tech. It was first come, first serve. And so you would have to write your name down on a piece of paper, go take your bar class, and then come out and get judged.
Now, to me, that reminds me of signing up for an open mic.
It's very much like signing up for an open mic. The only difference is you're dealing with like catty, privileged, Upper East Side white bitches who would cross people's names out they didn't like. They'd so write funny. Their names smaller in between people's names.
So
Excel calls me one day and says, like, you are going to start a high school mutiny. Like, you need to get here right now.
So funny.
My job for the first bit until we had like an online booking system was I had to be there from 8 o'clock in the morning until 2 in the afternoon guarding the clipboard.
How pissed were those women to see you guarding that clipboard?
They weren't happy.
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely thought that like, oh, if they're like friends with me, they'll like move up the list. So it kind of like brought me back to my hostessing days.
Sure.
If you want to pay me $100 for a $25 quick blowout, you can go next.
Right. It also must have been, were you feeling excited? Like, oh, I'm on to something here.
You know, I knew that I was onto something. There's a lot of things that I wish I knew then that I only know now.
Please elaborate.
I didn't understand how venture capital worked. I didn't understand how monetizing businesses worked. And frankly, like in the first 90 days of starting this, we'd been covered by everywhere from the New York Times to Fox Business to Good Morning America to whatever. I could have taken that fuel and gone out and raised millions of dollars.
Absolutely. Here's another quote you had, and I want to hear you more about what you wish you knew, but this was another quote that you had that I thought is really very important. You said you didn't want to get, someone was asking you about raising money, and you said you raised a much less amount of money than you could have because you wanted to avoid overcapitalization and playing startup. Now, something that is important about that is a lot of companies get, when they can get access to the capital, all of a sudden it's like they've got the coolest this and the coolest that, and it is playing startup. So you were looking to avoid that once you knew what it was, but now it sounds like also for a while you didn't even know what that was.
So for a while I didn't know what that was. And so like looking back at it now, I think I would have raised, you know, a better amount of money and put a team around this idea, because I was 26. I wasn't capable of scaling and growing and building support and team for what I think was an incredibly promising idea that frankly like could have been a bigger, more profitable company than it is now.
Sure.
And I bootstrapped for a while. And by the time I raised money, I was a year and a half in. And by that point, I was like, okay, like because we've ground this out for so long, I can't now just pour all this money on the fire. Right? So we raised like $1 million, and that's all we've ever raised. With the
why was that you felt you couldn't do that?
Part of it is that venture responds more to a business that's been around for 90 days than one that's up for 18 months.
Wow.
You have an easier time getting a big check off of lightning in a bottle than you would out of slow growth.
I think that that is similar to entertainment or anything that's new where it's like someone, because it's almost like someone can pop on the scene and then executives want to be like, ooh, bam, bam, boom, I discovered them. I'm going to make this. Then someone who's been around a long time, then they kind of overlook it because it's not the new, fresh thing. But then that person then needs to go reemerge.
No, yeah, exactly. It's like, sorry.
Oh, please, not at all.
That guy again. You know, it's like, and it doesn't matter that they're more talented. It doesn't matter that
they're
more broken. It doesn't matter that they've really spent the last 10 years living with 7 other comics in Bed-Stuy, and they're the best joke writer that we all love, right? Like they haven't had the traction that they need. And like, unfortunately, like time is evidence and it doesn't work.
Right. So you guys didn't. And so it's a year and a half in, and then you're like, okay, now I'm going to go. At what point did you hire your first employee?
Wait, we had employees day one because.
Okay. The dressers, right.
But
you must have had to hire someone besides the dressers at a certain point to help you manage the hairdressers.
So my hairstylist, Doug, is who I started with. He managed the hair side. I did the business piece, and then we raised money. We parted ways and then hired like a very senior traditional like COO type who came from, this was the big lesson that I learned from that. He asked me specifically not to ask for references from his previous company because he didn't want them to know that they were leaving. And me, being young and dumb, said, okay, because I trusted, like, here's this 40-year-old man who, like, has this big title who was one of our partners. Like, he should know what the hell's going on. And he and I were friends. And it wasn't until years later when things went south that I ended up actually knowing his previous boss far better. And he was like, yeah, I would have told you to run like the dick. You didn't ask me. And so because you didn't ask me, I was going to call you up and be a dick.
Right.
And so like, we just made a big hire for Prosper, which is the new business. We're hiring out of a competitor. And it was a weird conversation to be like, hi, person who's been in our space for 5+ years with like a proven track record. Like I still need to talk to someone.
Right. And what'd you do? Did you have to go to like jobs they had before they were working at a competitor?
No, I spoke to someone from the competitor.
Right. And then that's part of just part of business. What is the new company and where do you get your ideas from?
So the people management challenges of running Glam & Go and scaling Glam & Go were really, really, really hard.
Right.
And I thought that it was like, I had no degree. I had no business running a business, like managing people. Like, it must be that I'm bad. And it wasn't until my network scaled and I got to meet other business owners and operators that I realized, like, it's not that I'm bad at managing people. It's that people are really hard to manage. No software for frontline customer-facing employees that rounded out the skill sets that they needed to succeed within organizations like my own.
Mm.
And so Prosper was born to bridge that gap between employers and employees to operate successfully in a supportive way that is honest about the shortcomings of frontline workers and the headaches of admins and managers, make the entire organization more successful.
So is it like an app?
Yeah, it's a SaaS platform.
SaaS, which I always think is such a funny acronym. Yeah, software as a service.
And, you know, we are now, like, if you go to some of the largest arenas and stadiums and convention centers in the country and someone serves you a beer, they are doing it on Prosper.
Really? Yeah. Is it going to be publicly traded?
I mean, we're a year in.
Right, okay.
There's a lot of things that have to happen between now and then, and who knows if we're going to have a stock market in 8 weeks.
Right.
There's that.
You guys holding up with Corona.
The relevance of a software like ours that centralizes workflow and communication scheduling and like your like humans,
right,
has never been more important.
Sure.
And so we're honestly seeing like a big realization that like we are not a nice to have technology. We are an absolute necessity. Mm-hmm. If you want to succeed with your frontline strategy.
What about for Glim?
Yeah. It may exist. It may not. We're closed pretty much everywhere. And I don't run that company anymore. So there's a president there now.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm full-time at Prosper.
Oh, good for you. How was that passing the torch when you, for Glam and Go?
You know, I think if you find people that you trust, which is not easy.
Right.
You give them guardrails of like, if X happens, you need to call me first.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if you're in between B and Y, do what you want within reason. Right.
Also, it sounds like you kind of got out at a good time then, too.
You know, there's never a good time to get out of something that you own the majority of.
Right. So you still are the majority owner of it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So you didn't. Yeah. Because I mean, with Corona, that just changes like the whole conversation around businesses that require interpersonal contact.
You know, I think they've done a really good job of being stocked with PPE. I think they've done a really good job of keeping their team safe. I think they've done a really good job of keeping customers safe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people still need haircuts. People still need color. People, you know, well, go back to a time where like they get all bougie to go out.
Sure.
You know, and I think it's just going to be a question of like, how do we smartly weather the storm and how do they, frankly, make choices, like knowing what they have in the bank and what they need to get from point A to point B.
So those are two things you learned. Are there other things that you wish you knew when you first started out?
Fire slow, fire fast.
So wait, say that one again.
Fire slow, fire fast.
I would think firing would be tough.
It's not that tough.
No.
Like, listen, when it's not somebody's fault or like it's just it's a function of the business, not the person, that's But like,
you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Right. Did you learn that lesson the hard way? The hire slow, fire fast.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like when you know something's wrong. It's like,
sure.
You know, it's even like your interpersonal relationships. Like when you know it's over, it's over.
And
like, it sucks because you're like, but that breakfast that they make is so good. And I'm like, I love the way they make the bathroom smell,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the perfume they wear. But you're like, mm-hmm. it's over.
Right.
Over.
Right.
And like, before you get to the point where you're like, you know, where somebody moves a fork and you're like, I hate you.
Right. Did you blink when we met you? Because I hate that blink.
I hate you.
Right. You drink water and I hate that about you. How is it managing dating with your business? Are you seeing anybody now?
I am not really. I mean, I'm seeing people.
Right. You're dating.
I'm dating.
Yeah. Do men get intimidated by the business owner? Is that not a problem? Do men get intimidated by you being a business owner or not in Manhattan?
I mean, I'm not running Goldman Sachs.
But still. Still.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're intimidated by my small business, like, you have your own issues.
Amen. Totally. And even if it was the biggest business in the world, then someone should be supportive of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had a quarantine boyfriend that I like fell very deeply in like with.
Right.
We're like FaceTiming every day and talking because I was in Florida for a while and then I came out here for a while. Oh my God, he turned out to be the worst.
That sucks. Cause also sometimes when you meet someone through FaceTime, it can be like, no, not even FaceTime, like those online connections, you can like hyper connect because it's like talking and you haven't had the in-person energy. What changed?
Yeah. So we met on Hinge. We were supposed to hang like before quarantine and then I left. We ended up not because Corona.
Right.
Like it kind of like started with just like sending memes back and forth with that big naked guy on the bed.
I haven't seen that one.
For a good 6 weeks revolved around Tiger King and the black naked guy on the bed.
Right. Haven't seen that one, but I'll check it out.
Who's dead, by the way?
Oh, no, I haven't seen this meme.
You haven't seen the
what guy? Do I need to Google? Big naked guy in bed?
Just Corona. Yes. I think his name is Barry Wood.
Sounds like a real porn star name. Mm-hmm. The man bigger than the meme. Barry Wood sitting on a bread. Okay, let's see. What.
Just like a big naked
guy. Whoa, that's a big boy. He's a big boy.
Sitting on a bed.
Wow.
And apparently he's dead.
Oh.
I know.
Poor Barry. Big boy, yeah. Big boy.
R.I.P. Barry.
So you guys are sending out over the memes. You're feeling the like.
Memeing, which turned into like phone calls, which turned into FaceTime, which turned into like talking all day and FaceTiming all day and like.
Yep. Blah, blah, blah.
And then when I came back to the city, we went on like one incredible date. Like the best date ever.
Oh, that's great.
Because that's so much fun. And it like was a good like push and pull to like finally get to me because like I was here, he was there. Then I was here, like a whole to do. And I was like, oh, you kind of just like seem like a flake. And then the next day he sends me fun night.
And that's it.
And then I was like, okay.
Was it fun night period?
There was no punctuation.
Okay, good. Oh, thank
you. Wasn't that rude.
Oh, yeah, oh a period. You'd be like, did I fucking...
If there was punctuation, someone would have been punched in the face.
Yeah, be like, did I kill your mother? Like, why do you hate me?
And so then it was my birthday last week. And he's like, okay, great. Like, are you coming back out to the Hamptons? I was like, yes. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll see you this week. And then the night before my birthday, he calls me on the phone. And he's like, great. What is the plan tomorrow? Like, you tell me and I'll be there. And I was like, okay, cool. And on my birthday, he sends me happy B-Day. And then I send him what the plan is. We're all going to go to lunch somewhere.
Yeah.
With my friends that are out here. And he doesn't respond until 5:30.
Oh, what a jerk.
I know. And he goes, so fun. And I just went, dude. And at that point, like, I'd had rosé.
Wait, why did he say so fun?
Because I sent him the plan. I'm like, okay, great. Like, here's the plan. Here's the time. And he sends me so fun, hours and hours and hours later. And I just went, dude, are you kidding me? And he goes, I had to head back to the city. And I just went, I don't really like the way you treat people, specifically me.
Right. Why did you say you were going to be there? Why didn't you tell me? Because also it's like, you fucking dick fuck. Now you know that I was probably thinking about that on my birthday when I should have just been thinking about other stuff.
Yep. I mean, luckily, like, I had really great friends around me and my family and enough wine where, like, I wasn't, but at the same time, I was just like...
Because also you're like, are they okay? Like, what's going on?
I don't really care, but I'm pretty sure... And my mom and I have a thing, like, when a guy kind of is just like, we're not into him, we're just like, I guess he died. And
so, he passed away. How are you texting me from the dead, fuckface? Has he been trying to message you now?
No, but he still watches all my stories, which I think is really weird. I might unfriend him. I don't know how to unfriend on Instagram, but I might.
Dating is brutal.
Yeah, but then there's a couple new guys that are really actually like quite nice and call, and they say they're going to call and show up. And
on Instagram, you unfriend. You can't. I mean, not you unfollow. Sorry, that's the unfriend equivalent.
Okay. Well, I will.
You got to unfollow him.
Yeah.
Well, where can people find you online and keep up with all your business endeavors?
So if you want to follow Prosper, we're at Prosper at Work. It's P-R-O-S-P-R at Work. And our logo is the Vulcan salute. Can I live long and prosper?
Oh, okay. So when I first saw the email, I didn't know if this was like a PR email address because I didn't know. So Prosper is the got it. Okay. I hadn't in my Googling around, I didn't put all this together. So thank you.
Your frontline teams Prosper.
Got it.
And then if you want to follow me, it's at World of Wasser. W-A-S-S-E-R.
World of Wasser. Well, thank you very much for doing the show. I haven't talked to any entrepreneurs yet, so this is very good info.
Yes. And anytime.
I appreciate it.
Seeing your beautiful face with makeup on.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. Oh, I've been doing the makeup for a while. I've been wearing makeup for a little bit now, but if you find the makeup expert on Instagram, that's my girlfriend. She does a really good job with makeup.
What is it?
It's the makeup expert on Instagram. Ooh. That's hers. Although
that's a good handle to have snatched.
It is. I know. She's trying to create a beauty product. And I keep telling, I'm going to tell her, like, just get your PowerPoint done. Because she's definitely been letting other things kind of stall the you know, I think the more that you learn about things sometimes, the more, I know that's been the case for me with script writing. Like before I
have a pitch deck. And if she just Googles pitch deck, there's all these templates in the world.
Right.
And I'm happy to send her some of mine.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Yeah. All right, I'm going to hit stop recording this, but thank you so much.